Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Match Ball.
This podcast brought to you by Levi Solicitors. You can get that 10% discount at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. 30 years on, we're charting the journey from Leeds United's return to the top flight to lifting the championship trophy in 1992. And we're taking that journey game by game and doing a Match Ball 30 on the 30th anniversary of each match. I'm Dan, with me, Michael and Moscow, and we are heading for Bramall Lane in a twist of fate, same week that we've got it in the 2020 iteration of Leeds United. We are going for a Yorkshire derby, this time against Dave Bassett's side, but it's a lunchtime kickoff on a Sunday once again.
The players were not happy. Gordon Strachan was not happy about having his routine disturbed. There was a big piece in his column in the Yorkshire Evening Post. He was talking about his bananas and porridge diets, which was revolutionary at the time. People couldn't understand that he ate bananas and porridge, so he was explaining why he thought that was a good thing. He was saying that's absolutely fine for him because it makes a good Sunday morning breakfast, but he was sorry for the lads who like to have chicken before a match, because eating chicken just after you've woken up on a Sunday, nobody wants that, do they?
The lineup for Leeds then: John Lukic in goal, Mel Stirland, Peter Haddock, Chris Fairclough and Chris White, the back four. The famous four across midfield: Gordon Strachan, Gary McAllister, Gary Speed and David Batty. And up front, Imre Vardy and Lee Chapman. And this might also be a roll call, a who's who of Leeds United. Well, it's echoes from the future, isn't it, when you have a look through some of the names on this list? I mean, crikey, go for it.
First of all, why isn't Simon Tracy playing?
Coward.
He was always he always had a shocker against us, but do you think he just didn't fancy this one? Someone called Phil Kite in there, I've never heard of.
This was just after we'd beaten them 4-0 in Division 2. This is the top two from Division 2 coming up and playing each other in the first division. So it's setting down a marker. And it was, everybody remembers the 4-0 from the promotion year. It's Gary Speed's goal when he's, "Go on, Gary, get one yourself, son." But Simon Tracy's embarrassment was kind of hidden by that. Bobby Davison charging the ball down and winning a penalty. More classic John Boyd commentary on that. Well, he's panicked. Tracy has panicked. And that'll be a penalty, no doubt. Yeah, the future Leeds players amongst this lot, there's John Pemberton, Paul Beasley, who were Wilkinson's finest signings, I'm sure everyone will agree. Brian Dean, Leeds-born, Leeds lad, exiled in Sheffield temporarily. And, of course, the big one and the headline grabber was a past Leeds player of approximately 7 days, Vinnie Jones, making his home debut as captain for the Blades, but for his very old manager and Howard Wilkinson's very good friend, Dave Bassett.
I think I've mentioned this before, but I was very surprised to actually hear Paul Beasley talk. Somehow for the first time, he was on Under the Cosh, which is quite a good listen actually, listening to him talk about his career, but a very, very scouse and very sweary man, Paul Beasley.
I didn't expect him to be scouse. Is that right?
He is very, very scouse. Doing painting and decorating these days. Oh, weirdly, actually, just looking at what they were kind of up to these days, particularly Pemberton and Beasley, because obviously we kind of know a bit about Jones and Dean, but John Pemberton, and he almost crossed paths with Paul Beasley's son, who is a footballer and played for Chesterfield, where John Pemberton's now manager, but he's since moved on. So that would have been a nice little link-up for them. But now he's at Solihull Moors now. He's Jake Beasley.
So this would be the first time since we thumped them at Easter, and very much revenge on the minds of the Blades and possibly with Vinnie Jones as well.
They tried to build it up in advance. Everybody wanted it to be the two great mates in midfield in our promotion season were now rivals. So it's David Batty up against Vinnie Jones. And Batty was his typical kind of phlegmatic self when they're trying to get a quote from him, when he just said, you know, it's just another game, Vinny's just another opponent. But I did, you don't often hear footballers anymore say things like, I want to see Leeds thrash his team. But there's nothing personal in that. When did you last hear a footballer say they wanted to thrash the team that they were playing on Saturday? There'd be absolute outrage if, you know, Billy Sharp went to the Sheffield Star and said, I hope we thrash Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds on Saturday, whenever they're playing.
You might have zeroed in on that word there, Moscow, but the word that I've just picked out of that sentence is nothing, because there's no way that David Batty is using the word nothing over now. I want to see Leeds thrash his team, but there's no personal in that. That's how he said it, hasn't he?
It's the Yorkshire Evening Post. They have to iron the dialect a little bit for the readership.
One player I learned about from listening to that Paul Beasley interview, actually, was Billy Whitehurst, who I think he said he was the hardest player I've ever played with. So adding Vinnie Jones to Whitehurst, I don't know if you two have got any memories of him, but I've only kind of come across him since this point, and he was one of these players who dotted around all over the country because he kept assaulting people, more or less. But I was reading an article on the Football Pink, which described him as, where he said, it's hard to single out a player in English football whose game was based on as much anarchy and pure malice as Billy Whitehurst, which is quite a recommendation.
I don't remember much about him. My main, the way I zero in on his name in this team is that him and Wilf Rostren alongside him for Sheffield United both sound like they should have been playing in the 1940s. You don't get enough Wilfs nowadays, certainly not a Wilf Rostren and a Billy Whitehurst. But it sounds like Billy kept some good old-fashioned blood on his boots. I mean, you're not going to get anything else under Dave Bassett. He was the guy who dragged Wimbledon up from Division 4 and then dragged Sheffield United up from Division 4. And it's one of those surprising things that him and Howard Wilkinson used to be, well, I presume still are, absolute best of friends. And in the build-up to this, they were talking about the way that Leeds' strikers have put pressure on Simon Tracy in the game at Easter. And there'd been some talk, you know, are Leeds going to try that tactic again? Will they be pressuring the goalkeeper? And I think it was Gordon Strachan again in his column said, I don't think we'll be doing that this weekend, because whenever Howard Wilkinson and Dave Bassett came up against each other, they would try to catch each other out with some new kind of tactic. So for the Easter game, that was Wilkinson's thing. Press the goalkeeper and make him panic. But he couldn't do that again because he'd done it against Bassett before. So the big thing is, what's it going to be this time? And there was even, I think it was Strachan was saying, you know, in the build-up to the match, we're waiting to find out what Wilco's big plan is going to beat his best friend.
Dave Bassett's instructions for Billy Whitehurst were apparently he used to just bring him off the bench mainly, and he just used to give him the instruction, cause mayhem, Billy.
So how did this match pan out then? What happened on the football pitch, the narrowest football pitch in the division, no less?
Well, I mean, Wilkinson was wary of their offside trap in advance of that, which had often been the thing thrown at Leeds that we just used to play offside all the time. Do you want a Wilkinson joke? There was a Wilkinson joke before this game. He said, it will be a case of keeping on the bright side to avoid being caught offside.
They're Sheffield geographical jokes, aren't they?
It's all very good. The match... Leeds won. That's the main thing. I mean, it was tough going. I don't know how many offsides there were in the end. Vinnie Jones had a very, very good header from pretty much the edge of the penalty area. And Lukic just gets a hand to it and tips it onto the bar. And then it drops down, hits his back, goes out for a corner. But Lukic doesn't have a clue where it is. He looks over his left shoulder to see if it's gone into the net. And then as he's looking round again, he sees Brian Dean running towards him, and even though he is lying flat on his back with his legs in the air like a dog having its tummy tickled, he somehow manages to jump in the air. I'm now going to change species, like a cat that's been frightened by a cucumber. I've not seen many people on a football pitch that startled, and then he kind of lies down again and just bursts out laughing because it's just big Dino. Nobody could be frightened of old Dino. But that was it was a bit of a worry. Sheffield United did have a couple of big chances, but we got to 0-0 on the hour mark, and poor old Imre Vardy, after having his goal ruled out against Spurs, hadn't managed to crack Sheffield United. So I don't know if this was Howard Wilkinson's big idea. Lee Chapman's already up front. Let's have John Pearson up there with him. Why not? because 1 6-foot-2 striker is never enough when you can have two.
Leeds and Sheffield United trying to out-bastard each other, basically, there up front.
And it worked. Pearson was apparently in good form before this game. He got 2 in 4 for the reserves and was shaking off all the talk about us signing Dean Saunders. Everyone says, are we going to sign a partner for Chapman? Well, he's banging them in the reserves, and he banged one in this game. A good move. Speed and Batty and Sterling. McAllister on the overlap. Dicks it up to the back post, and a fine header back across Phil Kite.
I mean, you say good form. I'd say 1 goal in 19 months for a striker probably wouldn't ordinarily count as good form.
In the reserves, 2 in 4 in the reserves. And you don't know who he'd been up against. It could have been, you know, Barcelona reserves that they were playing every week. We don't know.
So 1-0 up with 17 minutes to go. And just a few minutes after that, we should have wrapped it all up because Chapman's given a good chance by Strachan. But this one goes begging, not as prolifically Chapman as John Pearson.
Should have headed it.
Under any circumstances, whether it was on the floor, whether it was in the air, he should have headed it. I mean, maybe Dean Saunders will come in to replace Chapman, and it's John Pearson stays in the team. And we did need another goal, preferably, because we've got John Lukic's tipping a Paul Beasley header onto the bar. And yeah, a lot of headers. It sounds very, very Bassett versus Wilco, this match.
It was tense in that last 10 minutes, and it's never more tense with Leeds fans when there's lots of them there. 6,500 behind that goal at Bramall Lane. You can only begin to imagine the fun and games that the police had.
I'm sure South Yorkshire police know how to deal with a big crowd.
Yes, indeed. Well, it was made safe in the last minute anyway, much to the relief of those mass Leeds fans behind the goal.
I feel like the celebration to this goal is more famous than the goal itself. It's the one where it finishes with Strachan sat on the advertising boards doing a, I don't know how you do it. It's almost like a Beano comic, I'm really pleased with myself gesture.
It's a strongman pose.
Yeah, it's pumping his fists, but with his arms out almost as if showing, have a look at this, which is, given it's gone, Strachan is obviously not massively impressive. He's hardly like Adama Traore or someone, is he? But it's a good goal though. Ridiculous pace from an old man. Runs the length of the pitch without anyone really there to tackle him, admittedly. It's one of those where he's, I guess they've just pushed everyone forwards for a corner and we're breaking, and then he hits, it looks like he's through on goal, but then he checks back, but then takes it back into his left foot. And I think it's Jim Rosenthal on the commentary says he's mishit it, but I think that's maybe a bit harsh. I think it hits it just perfectly, and it does admittedly trickle into the goal at about 1 mile an hour.
I think he strokes it in as well. It's almost a carbon copy of Speedo against Sheffield United at Easter, where that was from a Blades corner. Chris Kamara did the tackle on the edge of the box, and that set Speed free to run through Sheffield United's half and score. And this time it was Gary McAllister from their corner on the edge of the box, who plays a slightly more cultured pass than Chris Kamara, kind of tackling it into Speed's path. And then Strachan onto it. Strachan used to like his kind of ironic celebration. So this one, he's doing his strongman pose, and it's famous because he's got the top man shirt on as well. So it is Jim Rosenthal on the commentary, and I think he ends it by saying, Gordon Strachan proving he is the top man in Yorkshire this weekend. But I've seen him before when he scored a header, he'd kind of run around kind of pointing at his head going, can you believe little me, 5'6" and I've scored a header? And he's done it with left foot goals as well. If he scores with his left foot, his celebration is going to stand there and do a kicking motion with his left foot, pointing at it as if, my standing foot, I've scored with my standing foot. So he liked to make fun of his own limitations, but he also liked, he was quite proud of the fact that he managed to do this without running out of steam, because I think he's 32 at this point already. And one of the big questions of Leeds coming up to Division 1 is, I mean, Alex Ferguson had sold him to us in 1989 because he thought he was over the hill, done, not good enough for the first division anymore. And now here he is, and he's even older. Will he be able to cut it in the top flight? And as he said, I mean, you're doing his voice for these, aren't you, Michael? Oh, no, it was Alex Ferguson, but they're from the same place.
Yeah. Believe me, I really enjoy scoring that goal. It shows I still have my pace.
There you go. Sounded very, very stern about it. But It was a good goal, and it for a last minute running from one end of the pitch to the other for the second time against Sheffield United in a row. Good. And also, you know, putting so-called promotion rivals in their place. We'd needed the last day victory at Bournemouth to get ourselves up. But then coming into the first division, we've signed Gary McAllister. They've signed Vinnie Jones. I think you can kind of see we're on slightly different trajectories.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I've just had a look, Moscow, and it turns out Gordon Strachan was 33 and a half years old when this game was played.
He just gets older and older and older, and yet shows no sign of ever slowing down.
And no slowing down when it comes to the development of Elland Road, because we are getting a new, not just a stadium, we're getting a new super stadium.
And you left out the most important part, the cost.
Well, no one's ever going to spend this amount of money on a stadium, you silly Billy.
Is it £1 billion?
It's a £20 million super stadium. But, and this is crucial, and it is actually crucial, council leader John Trickett says it will go ahead without using poll taxpayers' money. So that's a big part of it, because immediately the thing to remember about Elland Road at this time is that it is still actually owned by Leeds City Council. So this isn't Leeds United's plans to redevelop Elland Road. This is actually the council's plans to spend £20 million on a super stadium.
It was a 25-year plan to get Rod Stewart to play there, I believe.
Got to play the long game, haven't you? You know, it's funny, looking at the plans that are here, we've got the picture of the stadium from the Yorkshire Evening Post at the time. I can remember seeing these plans and being wowed by them. I mean, listen to these. Do you know the facilities it's got in it? It's got offices, boxes, hospitality.
Boxes of what?
I'm not telling you that. And a concourse, among other things. What I should note is, if you see that one big pointy arrow there at the front on the west stand, existing main stand, they were talking about building backwards over the existing 1950s main stand at Elland Road at this point, not replacing it. So, yes, it wasn't necessarily the all singing, all dancing thing we might see if and when they do get round to replacing the west stand in the next couple of years.
Well, one of the other highlights that you missed from the exploded diagram that they do where the roof is flying off and they've got arrows everywhere showing that there's it's interesting that the proposed new tiers, so both the stand, Lowfields Road stand as it was then, and the west stand, we're going to get new upper tiers, both with 3,554 seats. But crucially on the diagram, toilets. That's what you missed. Toilets.
All mod cons in these new stadiums. Hot and cold running water, colour television. It's going to have it all.
In the end, we did see the east stand getting built, but a little while after this, and slightly grander plans in terms of the upper tier. We got greater capacity on that side of the ground, because the plan here was to bring capacity up to 40,000, which we actually managed with the East Stand alone.
There were some bits in this that actually haven't happened yet. They were going to fill in the southeast corner, which is the cheese wedge, as is now. That had, if you read John Howe's A to Z of Elland Road, The Only Place for Us, it'll tell you about how the foundations for the cheese wedge just stood there exposed since the mid-70s when they basically ran out of money to build them. So the plan was to finish that. But then also seats and a roof for the southwest corner, which is where there is the scoreboard is now. And it's still, I mean, that's the one part of Elland Road that really does just look an absolute tatty mess always. But yeah, and then obviously this is before all-seater stadiums have come in, but they were on the way. The Taylor report had been published, so the COP would be seated. And yeah, the plan was a 40,000 all-seater stadium with work in phases over 18 months, hoping to start from the end of 1990-91 season.
One crucial sentence to be found in the report for this one is that a public appeal may also be launched if the council can't get the money together to fund this thing, because there was the Football Trust as well, which has been replaced but still exists in some form or another, where they can apply for money to develop stadia in this country. So it wasn't necessarily the council funding it all.
Well, yeah, the idea was with the Football Trust, which came in with alongside the Taylor report, that said if all these football grounds have to convert to seating to prevent another Hillsborough disaster, essentially, to meet the requirements of the Taylor report, they're going to need some help financially. So, you know, clubs like Lincoln or, you know, Stockport, they won't be able to afford to do this. So the Football Trust would provide money. I think it was perhaps a little bit optimistic in that sense then for the council to be saying, no taxpayers' money, we'll have private sponsorship and the Football Trust. And the Evening Post went to the Football Trust and asked their spokesman if they would be providing a rumoured £8 million towards the Super Stadium. And you can almost hear the laughter in their quotes that says, I don't think it'll be anywhere near that.
Did it end up, it was about two in the end, wasn't it, I think, that we ended up getting from them?
That's the future. No spoilers. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. At the moment, we've got the Yorkshire Evening Post canvassing local opinion, which is not necessarily all in favour.
If we're not doing spoilers either, I'll just say that the legroom in the lower tier of that East Stand looks probably all right to me. I think they'll probably sort it.
I tend to agree with you there on that, Michael. But then again, at this point, I was about 13 and that legroom was adequate.
Do you know what? I was in there from being a child. And even as a small child, the legroom has not been adequate in that lower tier. It's ridiculous.
Well, the legroom is probably not being addressed as part of this, because the problem with the legroom in the lower tier is it is the old low field seating still. They kept that part and they just bolted seats to it, very much like they did with the COP, where it's the old terraces with seats bolted on. So there was never a plan to demolish it right down to the ground and build a new East Stand on top. So I think this plan would have suffered from that same fatal flaw as well. I don't think that's the reason for the local response, though. One person, the Yorkshire Evening Post, asked what they thought about it, just said he's had enough of living near the stadium and he's moving to Wortley and he would not come back. And I quite enjoyed, this is a real indicator of the time. I'm not sure what Gravely's was called in 1990. Somebody might remember, but Roy Tebbutt, who was running it at the time, he says Leeds and the council are doing a good job of running the stadium and of managing the football team, and he's all for the redevelopment, but he's a rugby league fan. He watches Hunslet Rugby League, who are playing at Elland Road. He's not particularly interested in the football team.
I've just dug out a copy of John Howe's book, actually, to try and see. I think it was probably United Fisheries at that point.
Well, he should have named it, stuck to his guns and called it Hunslet Rugby League Fisheries.
Well, we also heard from ex-fullback Jimmy Dunn, who lived locally, and he played for Leeds. I mean, Moscow, I'll defer to you on this. When did he play for Leeds?
1947 to 59. This was quite sweet, actually, that as they're wandering around the streets of Beeston asking people what they thought of the new stadium, living on Crossheath Grove, which is just a stone throw away from the back of the South Stand, is Jimmy Dunn, fullback who played. It's, so 47 to 59, he would have been alongside, he was alongside John Charles in the promotion team that got us up before Charles was sold to Juventus, and will have been playing for Leeds when the West Stand burnt down and the new one was being built, and he's bang up for it as well. He said it'd be grand to have big games here and other big events like concerts. So maybe, hopefully, Jimmy Dunn was still around when Rod Stewart did play and was grooving on the grass along with all the other. I mean, the footage of the dancers at that game was one of the highlights. It's probably, people talk about what was the most fun about the years outside the Premier League. I don't think any Leeds United fan had as much fun as the, how do we describe them delicately? The fans, the Rod Stewart fans, who were let out for their one night out a year for that gig.
I like to think that he sat there in his back garden in Beeston, is Jimmy Dunn. I don't know. Canatelli's in one hand, handkerchief on his head, just knowingly tapping his foot on the grass, going, finally, finally.
So they still haven't done that. They still haven't done that fucking West Stand, though, have they?
And he'll be phoning up Wilf Rostron, his friend from Sheffield. Hey, Wilf.
Well, back to the football then, and we played a day later because we were on the Sunday than the majority of the division, which played on the Saturday. So we had a little bit of ground to make up. We took the chance with our game in hand there to leave us having played 6, won 3, drawn 1 and lost 2, sitting in 6th position on 10 points. Meanwhile, Liverpool atop, having won 6 out of 6 on 18 points. So not quite in touch with the top, but it was looking all right.
I mean, Liverpool, ridiculous. They can't be allowed to do that, can they? 6 games, 6 wins. No. And it was the Merseyside derby. They'd gone 2-0 up at halftime and won 3-2. So even their closest neighbours can't stop them. The champions, of course, because they were champions of the first division and we were champions of division two. Tough team.
Liverpool seems to be running away with it already at this early stage in the season, but Leeds will cling on to their coattails as much as we can throughout the season, hopefully. In second place, 4 points behind Liverpool on maximum points at Arsenal. At this point, currently unbeaten, having won 4 and drawn 2 of their 6.
Look at their goals against Colum as well. 3. They've conceded 3. Only Spurs better. Spurs have only conceded 2, but that's because Imre Vardy's goal was disallowed for absolutely no reason. Otherwise, that number would be very different indeed. But it's Arsenal next for us, coming to Welland Road. It feels like we're getting a lot of tough games. We've already played Scum, who we are now above them in the table on goal difference. But then Spurs, who are now 3rd, and then we've got Arsenal 2nd, who don't concede any goals and they're unbeaten. The top 4, in fact, Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs, Palace, none of them have lost a game yet. It's a good division this year and we're near the top.
And back to Elland Road when we face the Gunners on September the 29th.
The Match Ball.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.